Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Today is Tuesday, September 20th, 2011. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43, and I am joined by the all-star collection of beer minds in the world here today. We've got Garrett Oliver and Horst. He's going to kill me. Horst, everybody just jump in and say hi. We've got Garrett Oliver. Come on, say your names and everybody.
I'm Horst Dornbusch.
I'm Horst Dornbusch, and it's spelled D-O-R-N-B-U-S-C-H.
And we got, who else is here?
I'm Christian De Benedetti, and somebody pronounced that Christian De Billy Billy today.
And what's your name over there?
I'm Peter Kennedy.
All right, we got...
And Garrett Oliver.
And...
Jen Schwartman.
These are like the minds of beer. We've got two books on the table today. We've got Garrett and Horst's new book, The Oxford Companion to Beer, which is the talk of the town.
We are so happy, all of us, at having won the MacArthur Award for the Genius Grant. Oh, sorry.
And then we've got from...
I'm sorry, what?
Christian, half a million what? Daddy. Christian, what's the name of your book?
It is the Oxford Companion Beer. No, it is the Great American Ale Trail, and it's just out 10 days ago.
So there's a lot of cool things going on. We'll give thank you to our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com. Check out GreatBrewers.com. But first, we're going to talk about the party last night. Yesterday at Brooklyn Brewery, what happened, Garrett?
I don't remember anything. I don't take any responsibility. And all I can say is that I apparently was found. No. Never the words that you want to speak in the morning. No, it was a great party. It was the launch party for the Oxford Companion to Beer. You know, I was saying, having seen the pictures today that of me and Horst, it was a shame that we weren't more colorful. You know, I mean, we should have been lively. You haven't seen the pictures.
No, I have been traveling, so I have not.
Is that what you call it these days?
Yes, I was sleeping it off.
Yes, I believe the old phrase was indisposed.
We
had about 500 people there. It was a wonderful party. Everybody from restaurant people. I mean, just the whole world beer and food.
It was fantastic, and I was so excited to get to see the part of the extension, because I haven't seen the expansion at Brooklyn, and the room that we were standing in was just gorgeous. I was telling Garrett, it's truly elegant, the new brewery. If you have a chance to see it, you're standing among bottling lines and you see tanks in every direction and equipment, and yet it's just this really like beautiful place to be.
So wait,
with a chandelier too.
Is that what turns you on?
It's one of the things.
So you guys, you had a party to launch the book, Oxford Companion to Beer, and then you also made a beer to go along with
it. We made a beer to go along with it, and I actually brought it with me. And, the Oxford Companion to Beer, I am editor-in-chief, and Horst Dornbusch is associate editor. So we got together to make a beer, which was a collaboration, which is a beer about a book, which is a collaboration. And the third part of the collaboration is our fellow writer, Thomas Krause-Weiermann, who also has Weiermann Maltings in Bamberg, Germany, where we get a lot of our malt from. So he wrote a lot of the pieces on malt for the book, which Horst
Gamely... He wrote about 30 pieces.
Yes, yeah, which Horst Gamely translated from the German. And then he provided us with floor-malted wheat and floor-malted barley. Now, floor-malted barley is fairly familiar to a lot of us, but floor-malted wheat probably hasn't been available in the United States for over 100 years. And all the floor malted wheat in the United States is at Brooklyn Brewery right now. And so we got together and we made a wheat wine made from 100% floor malts, now re-fermented in the bottle. Now, there are two versions. One is a draft version, which will be in the places where Brooklyn Brewery is, about half the country. And there was a special version, which is the one I brought today, which is the bottle-conditioned version. It's about 9%, re-fermented in the bottle with champagne yeast, and this will only be available as part of a box set, makes a perfect holiday gift, with the Oxford Companion to Beer. So you will have the book, The Oxford Companion to Beer, and the beer, The Companion.
All right. Well, where did you get that special floor malt from?
From Thomas Krause Weiermann. He had it. He had it made. I'm forgetting whether he actually made it in Germany or did he do the malting in Czech Republic.
All the floor malt from Weiermann is made in Benešov in the Czech Republic.
Okay.
Halfway between Prague and Pilsen, in a tiny 19th century malting company, which did not change much because of communism. There was no investment, so they are still making malt the old-fashioned way.
And most people have never tasted something, you know, really like this. And I've liked some wheat wines in the past, and wheat wine is pretty much like barley wine, except that in this case it's 55% wheat. Horst and I did the recipe together, and you know, it really shows that wheat through. And normally when we have a strong beer with wheat in it, we think Weiss beer, fermented with a Weiss beer yeast, and therefore those flavors. This is different. This is a English-style ale yeast. And so, well, since I've been talking, might
we
as well,
would love to taste it.
Might as well pop this open.
I want to take this in a different direction because I have this amazing panel here in this studio today. And I want to ask you guys, since we're talking about books, are there any other, for everyone in this room, any other really good beer books that you can recommend? Because I feel like that beer writing is just coming into its own. And any beer books that I should read so I can learn more about beer?
Well, of course, Tasting Beer is a great one for people to really get an overview of a lot of styles, a lot of, you know, just it's a preparation book for the Cicerone that is a new system, three-tiered system for certifying people as, like, you know, qualified to serve beer. And that, I mean, it's Ray Daniels, isn't it?
Yep. It is Ray Daniels.
Yeah, and I mean, that's I feel like that's a good one to have on the shelf for a lot
Horst?
Of people
any,
out there.
Any books that you can recommend? It may have inspired you.
Well, it's very difficult to just recommend one book. It's just like when people ask me, what's your favorite beer? And I say, anything that's really good, and then it depends on my mood. When it comes to beer books, there are now so many on the market, it depends on what you want to use them for. If you're a home brewer and you need a recipe book, obviously The Joy of Home Brewing by Charlie Papazian is still the ultimate Bible. If you're interested in beer history, there are quite a number of good beer books out on the market. If you like German beer history, I recommend Prost, The Story of German Beer, by an author whom I know extremely well. In fact, he lives in my skin. That was a shameless plug, wasn't it?
So, Horst, just tell. Okay, is that your most popular book that you've written?
In terms of sales, it's my most popular book. Yes.
I'm sorry.
Until The Oxford Companion came out,
and
he has already surpassed my book.
Oh. And Christian, a favorite book besides your own?
Well, I'd love to add to what Horst was just saying. There's a great homebrewing book that just came out. It's called Beercraft by Will Bostwick and his wife. And,
it's,
you know, it's so interesting because, not to take anything away from what Charlie's great book did and has still doing for young, you know, starting out homebrewers, you know, I have a few dog-eared copies myself. But this new book by Will goes into brewing on a one-gallon scale, which is really useful for a lot of people who, like, maybe live in New York and have no room in their apartment, you know, and want to brew on a smaller scale. It also has this great chapter on off flavors, and it's sort of not something we usually talk about, but helping identify, you know, the off flavors in beer. Super helpful.
And Peter Kennedy, you're from Simply Beer.
Simply
That's your
beer.
Website?
That's right. Coming from a home brewing world here, so, you know, designing great beers, another one. You know, you can't go wrong with Charlie Papazian's book. You know, that's just kind of a Bible for all us homebrewers when we start off.
Might I add The Brewmaster's Table, too? I mean, you can't, for food and beer pairing.
We'll raise our glass to that one, to Garrett Oliver's
Cheers.
Great book.
Cheers.
And Garrett, any books that inspired you along the way?
Oh, a lot of books inspired me along the way. I mean, there are the obvious ones, and people still need to go back, you know, and even if they're out of print, find Michael Jackson's Beer Companion, you know, which remains one of the, you know, greater pieces of writing about, you know, our subject period, and I think will remain so. You know, it's one thing we said in the Oxford book, or, you know, when I was writing on it. I think that Michael was, without fear of any successful contradiction, the most important voice in food and drink in the 20th century. And, you know, a lot of people would stand up and say, well, wait a minute, that's a little bit much. You have Julia Child, et cetera. But if you look at his influence on, you know, on the world, not just our world here in the United States, but worldwide, where every single brewer who opens a brewery, thousands and thousands of breweries know his name and were inspired by his works. And we don't even realize, most of us, that he invented the idea of beer style as a concept out of whole cloth. I didn't know that until I did the work, you know, on writing the piece on him in the book. And we think of it as, when we discuss beer, how can you discuss beer without discussing beer styles? But the words beer style don't appear anywhere until Michael Jackson. You know, he pretty much, not that there weren't beer styles, of course, Weiss beer was Weiss beer, etc., but the whole idea was basically put together by him. So our taxonomy of beer was invented by one man. And so for those people who might be coming down the pike, and it's unimaginable to us that people wouldn't know his work, but if you have somebody who came to craft beer in the last 5 years, they may never have read Michael Jackson, in which case they haven't even gotten started.
Well, I'm holding your book right now, The Oxford Companion to Beer. It's brilliant. I mean, you mentioned Michael Jackson. We opened to Michael Jackson. Are there any particular chapters that you're really proud of, or sections that we would recommend to people besides reading about Michael Jackson?
Oh, I mean, you know, I think that you know, I'm very proud of the book as a whole and of all of our contributors. We had 166.
I was going to ask you how many.
166 from 24 countries. Steve Parks, who runs the American Brewers Guild up in Vermont, you know, and is an instructor, used to be the head brewer for Otter Creek and is now opening his own brewery. Really excellent writer, great stuff across the board. Pete Brown's piece on India Pale Ale is going to shock and anger some people because Pete has actually done so much original research that he's going to really demolish some hoary myths, even ones that were held by me previously, because he's actually held newspapers from the 1780s in his hands and seen the advertisements and can tell you basically everything.
So how did you find these contributors? How did you come up with that list of people, and how did you assign, you know, a section like that?
Some of them came to me. I mean, in the case of Pete, he had written the book Hops and Glory, you know, which is a exceedingly well-researched a piece on India Pale Ale. Great book. And, you know, I think that what we see in a book like this is that a lot of our story is missing. It's missing from the public record. Even though every brewery in the United States virtually does dry hopping, go and try to find something written out there in public about how professional brewers do dry hopping in breweries around the world. You know, and exactly what their techniques are. And you will find nothing. You know, bottle conditioning, nothing. You know, barrel aging, nothing. So you have here, for the first time, I mean, Fritz Brehm writing about, who did the great 1809 Berliner Weiss, talking about the history of Berliner Weiss. And, you know, people who really have gone in.
So deep. You really tried to seek out the experts on each individual section.
This was a book that I think both Horst and I, you know, and the people at Oxford certainly wanted to have what I refer to as earned authority, which means that, you know, you actually do know what you're talking about because you've done original research and not because you heard it third hand, you know, on something online. And, you know, I thought when I started this project, maybe no one would be interested in that, you know, by this day and age. But in fact, you know, I think, people really are looking for it. At least that's what it seems, because we sold out the first print run before our publication date, and we look like we might sell out the second print run before the publication date. So
that's fantastic. Congrats.
Yeah, Horace, tell us a little more about the chapters that you like and the particular stories.
Well, the book is multifaceted in that it is both highly technical, but also, let's say, the Reader's Digest of beer knowledge. And for the general public, for the person who is not accustomed to reading about beer, I recommend all the chapters on the different countries, the beers of India, the beers of Sri Lanka, the beers of Canada, the beers of Bavaria, of Germany, of Britain, of Scotland and Ireland, and so on, the beers of the Czech Republic, Switzerland, Italy. You can go through the world and it's there. If there is an important beer culture in the world, you can look it up. And I think that is a wonderful way to become acquainted with the global variety of beer. And that's one of the many things that this book does.
Now, in this book, Peter, do you get into homebrewing at all?
There is a section on homebrewing, and we do talk about dry malt extract, liquid malt extract, and things like that. But, you know, it is not an instructional book for homebrewers. That was not the intention, right, Garrett?
Yeah, no, I would say so. I think that homebrewers, though, will find this book more interesting than almost anybody else, because it actually is technical on a level. I mean, what it basically is an encyclopedia. And when I was a kid, you know, you used to grab the encyclopedia, you'd grab S, and you'd open it up, and there's space and snakes and spiders and all the things that kids love. And so I think that anybody who has a deep interest in beer will simply open this book anywhere and be entertained. And that because homebrewers delve into things on a really, you know, technical level these days, you know, I think that most of the organic chemistry stuff is going to be read more closely by homebrewers probably than anybody else, because in some ways they tend to be paying more attention. What we don't have as much of, and, you know, what Christian's book is going to be able to, you know, provide to everybody is, you know, we do get certainly into beer culture, but we're not telling you, for example, about the individual bars. We do cover breweries that we feel are culturally important. But just as important are the places in which people are going to consume that beer. So why don't you tell us about that, Christian?
thanks, Garrett. I appreciate that. Well, you know, it's true. What we have in the Great American Ale Trail, and what I sought to do with the book was to, you know, talk about beer culture everywhere. It's blooming, blossoming across the United States. It's more than just beer in your glass. It's about the places that you go and the people you're with. So my approach was to bring the American beer culture to life and travel and give people really like a roadmap to get out there and find it and delve in. No matter where they are in the United States, you can sort of dip a toe in and you'll find beer culture alive in some very surprising places from Florida to, you know, Alaska and Montana. Everywhere in the United States, craft beer is really flourishing. So I wanted to bring that alive.
Awesome. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a short break, and we'll come back and talk more about beer books on Beer Sessions Radio.
I'm going to Chicago. That's the last place my baby stays.
All right, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio. We're passing around beers.
Garrett, I love your new beer, the Companion.
Well, thank you very much. It's I think it's quite unique, in a lot of ways. Wheat wine is a style of beer that was widely brewed in colonial America. People brewed out of what materials they had at hand, and sometimes they had barley, and sometimes they had wheat, rye, oats, etc. So, Thomas Jefferson made wheat wine, and, James Madison made wheat wine. One of my favorite old documents is a letter from Thomas Jefferson to James Madison basically telling him, if you're done with my beer books, could you please send them back because I have work to do.
And then this next beer you just popped for us, what was that?
Well, I reached for it because I saw it here, speaking of unique beers, and it's called Cool Ship Red by Allagash. And Allagash has been doing, as most of you guys know, a fascinating project where they built a completely separate fermentation facility outside of their regular one, kind of next door in a separate shed building, and basically rebuilt a lambic brewery, from scratch.
We can ask Rob about that in a minute.
It's kismet. Guess who's on the phone right now? Rob Todd from Allagash.
Oh, my gosh.
How'd you guys get your hands on that Cool Ship beer?
Unbelievable. Hi, Rob.
Yeah. Oh, you were keeping it all for yourself, huh, Rob?
Yeah. So that's good you got some, because that one was very, very limited. So.
Yeah, and I'm excited.
Tell us how limited.
Oh, I think we only sold maybe 300 or 400 bottles at the brewery, so very, very limited.
So who brought that beer in?
That was me.
Peter Kennedy from SimplyBeer.com brought that in.
Yeah, oh, cool.
And we got Christian DiBenedetti.
Sure.
He's here. And Horst Dornbusch.
Hi, oh,
Rob.
Really?
Hi, Rob.
Yeah, man.
How's it going? Both
wonderful.
Christian and Horst?
Everything is doing fine. The Companion is sold out.
Rob, it's your birthday. It's your birthday.
Ooh, we should sing him
surprise.
Happy birthday.
Surprise. Is it really your birthday?
Well, it's not my birthday. No.
Oh, okay.
So
well,
we
that's,
have.
That's cool. You guys are in there. So are you guys all in New York right now?
Yep.
We're all in a container. We're in a small container that has been made into a radio studio, and we want to know, why are you not here?
Yeah. Well, you know what? You might see me in a couple days because I'm coming down for the final night, that Brewer's Choice event that Dave Broderick is going to be putting on, I guess, and maybe a few other people. I know Dave's just the one who I've been speaking to about it, but I will be at that event, and I'm looking forward to it.
I hear that some guy, Jimmy Carboni, has something to do with it, but I don't know.
Oh, is he involved too? Okay.
Somebody. And Garrett Oliver is going to be giving the keynote speech, which last year was, I'll tell you the speech. Last year, Greg Hall gave the keynote speech, and it was this. He said, "Some people say that beer is the new wine. I say craft beer is the new wine."
Yay.
Oh, there we go.
And that crowd went
speecher.
Wild.
So Garrett's going to top that this year.
Yeah, I'll have more words.
Nice. But we have
wine,
a couple,
is, yeah. Wine is old news. Beer is new history.
But since we have since we have you on the phone, and don't think we're just babbling idiots all the time, we've been trying to get you on the line for a long time. I'm Jimmy. I'm the host of the show. We got Jen Swartman here from Blind Tiger and everybody else, and Garrett.
Hey, yeah. Nice to talk to you.
So the first question is, you do make some cool beers, and we've had some things like Allagash Vrenden and Fluxus, and you've got like a dual program, don't you? You've got like Allagash White that everybody's trying to buy, and then you've got all these cool beers that nobody can buy.
Do people have to stand in line at the brewery on the day you release it, and that's where all of it goes? Like all these special things, the Cool Ship and the Gargamel that I love so much that I got like one sip of, and that was all I saw in a fleeting bottle.
Yeah, it's a good question and a good point. This is what I tell people, and it's definitely true. Those specialty beers, the Vrenden and the Gargamel and the Cool Ship beers, they're literally probably less than 1%. Well under less than 1% of our production, but they're probably at least 50, or if not more, percent of our culture. We spend just a ton of time and energy on those beers. Our barrel room right now is full of, it's probably got 150 oak barrels, mostly old wine barrels, full of all kinds of different beers, mostly experimental, tons of the spontaneous Cool Ship beers. We just don't sell much of it, but it's what keeps us It's what really keeps things exciting here. You know, we're still learning every day, even brewing the white. You're always learning as a brewer. But with those beers, you know, they're really an adventure, and you're really learning new things just on a constant basis with those beers, and they're just fun. We really don't make much money on them at all. They take up a ton of space in the brewery. They take up a lot of time, but it's why we got into the business, and we won't stop doing.
Well, I want to ask you about that, because you know we have kind of the same, you know, on a different level, same sort of thing going on, and we've kind of handled it, you know, differently than you guys have. And like, how do you work your way through that tension between having very little to put out there, having people who will get angry that you won't sell it to them, and you know, Lord knows, you and I both know how volcanic people can become if they can't get something that they really, really think they want.
Because those beers are so limited.
Yeah, they're so limited, and yeah, it's sort of like that's your new album, you know, and people are asking you about the album that you put out 20 years ago, and you're proud of that album, but you know, you're an artist and you've moved down the road, and this is what's, you know, lighting your hair on fire. Do you have an idea for how you might make that not maybe 50% of your production, but how you can get more of that out in public and be in public who you want to be as a brewery?
It's a very good question. To be honest, over the last 4 or 5 years, we haven't thought it through too much, only because we have people screaming very loud right now just about not being able to get enough white and black and triple and curio, some of our core brands. We're hearing more from them, and we just can't make enough white here even. And, you know, the other issue is some of those beers like Gargamel and Cool Ship, they take so long. They take sometimes three, four years to make.
They're beautiful beers, and I would hate to see any of those amazing special beers suffer at all because you were trying to expand your production and pump them out somehow. I mean, it doesn't seem possible, but even if it were possible, I would fear the outcome if that happened.
Well, I'm not suggesting that that one would want to do that. I find a frustration, and maybe you don't, at the fact that you make something, and this, as far as you're concerned, the best thing you've ever done in your life, and you have 30 cases. And like,
you know what?
I'm
just as frustrated as you, because I honestly can't get those beers even. I mean, I don't get...
Well, that's
everyone
comforting.
At the brewery gets a super, super limited allotment. I'm in that same boat. I don't get any special treatment. At my house, I have, if you came over to my house, there's no Gargamel, no Vagabond. I don't have any of that stuff.
Wait, Rob, hold on a second.
It's gone.
Horace, what's the beer that we're drinking right now?
Well,
Horace really wants to talk.
The Cool Ship Red?
It's the Cool Ship Red, yes. I have a quick question there.
Yep.
Have you ever send the beer to a lab to analyze what kind of maniac microbes you've got in there and how they might differ from typical Belgian freewheeling microbes?
We have, actually.
Is it a secret, or can you divulge some of what's in there?
You know what? I don't know the answer right now, to be honest. There's a student right now at UC Davis that's doing a paper, and I think it's a multi-year study he's doing for probably 2 years, and he's been taking samples of our beer at, say, 48 hours, one mm-hmm. month, 6 months,
yep.
a year, 2 years, and looking at the rise and fall of the different microbes that are doing the work in the beer. We haven't seen a whole lot of those results yet. Jason, our brewmaster, has seen more than I have,
mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I'm sure we'll see the full results, and I think it would be very interesting if he doesn't extend this study to this level, but I think it would be interesting to basically do an overlay study. Say, okay, here's a classic study on the Belgian beers, and here's a study on our beers, and kind of just overlay a chart showing the rise and fall of these different microbes. And I'm sure they're different. They have to be different. But I think you guys will taste it when you taste the beers. there in the studio, we're very pleased with the beers. They're not the same as the Belgian beers.
They're not. I just tasted it. It's the Geurs à la Maine tastes very different from a Geurs à la Geurs Belgique, definitely.
Yeah. Well, and actually, out of respect for the Belgian brewers, we're not calling these beers lambic, and we rarely use that word. If we ever do, it's just because it slips out maybe for comparison purposes. But we call them Cool Ship or Spontaneous. And, you know, our blend, we don't call Goose, we call Resurgam. And the raspberry beer, we don't call Frambois, we call Red. So we've tried to really, out of respect for the Belgian tradition, not use those words. But we're trying to also make the beer in this location and in this climate in very much the same way that the Belgians make the beer. So our process in the Cool Ship has a lot in common with the process.
Hey, Rob, you know what's cool? Talking to you on the phone, I don't even know who you are.
I've had a beer sometimes.
I've had a lot of your beers, and I'm lucky to get some of the special bottles. And but I've never met you, and I'm looking forward to meeting you.
I will introduce you at Brewer's Choice on Thursday. I will make a point of it.
But the thing I want to ask you is,
Rob is as rare as his beers.
I know, but let me ask the question is when you're brewing these different beers, do you have like one brewery where you're brewing, you know, your regular beers like white and black, and then you do it like an experimental brewery for these other like limited beers, or do you do them all together?
We brew them on the exact same system. So that Cool Ship beer was brewed on the exact same 30 barrel system that we brew the white on. Same one. So we'll just, you know, shut down brewing the white double black for a while, you know, clean the system, brew a batch of that spontaneous beer, and then move back to white. So it's the same system. One thing we do is we're extremely careful. Once that wort has cooled in the Cool Ship, we use totally separate hoses, pumps, everything, fittings, valves, everything separated just to avoid potential contamination. And even that is, it's still scary handling these beers in the brewery because we've basically got a cellar full of 150, 200, however many it is, barrels of this funk beer, all with bacteria and yeast, that would be a disaster if it got in the rest of our brewery and if it intermingled with our house yeast cultures. It would be a total disaster.
I was there. I heard Rob reminding them if they touch these things and then touch those things, that whole area is surrounded with woods. And they would never, ever find them. Made a mistake like that.
Well, Chris, listen, we got Christian here who just did his great book. Christian, you have any questions for Rob?
Yeah, well, Rob, hey, one thing I wanted to point out, the Cool Ship beer is delicious. And I describe, there's a chapter in my book about the Cool Ship Revolution, I call it. It's obviously a small one because, you know, only a few breweries in the country are able to make beer on the scale. But you mentioned the production side being challenged and your brewery just for your basic beers. And what I've noticed, and I'd love to hear from everyone else here in the studio about, is what they think about the fact that, as I researched this book over the course of the last year, I never went to a single brewery that was not at capacity or expanding and getting new tanks, like, delivered the day I would show up. And I think we're in a really remarkable time. So I would ask, I guess, Rob, you know, how are you coping with that? What are your plans for the future?
It's a constant challenge. I mean, we've been growing the last couple of years 35-40%. And when we start growing like that on the number of barrels which we're currently producing, it's just a huge challenge. It's a huge challenge to maintain quality. It's a huge challenge to keep adding the right people to the team here. You know, some of the great things, though, that come along with expansion, we're able to do a lot that we couldn't do before. For instance, we have equipment now that'll measure the oxygen content or air content in beer down to parts per billion. And that's equipment that we couldn't afford when we were only brewing 2,000 barrels a year. Now that we're brewing 35 or so thousand barrels, we can afford this equipment. that enables us to pinpoint weak spots in the system that we never could have pinpointed before that are giving us more consistency and more shelf life. So we're using this growth as an opportunity to just continually enhance quality. And we're also able to beef up our lab team. We've gone from 2 years ago, we had a guy that was doing lab work maybe 10 hours a week. Now we've got two full-time dedicated lab people that can just continually enhance quality in our sensory program here, tasting at the brewery. So it's got its challenges, but it's got its plus sides as well with the growth. But it's a challenge because every single day we are just barely able to meet wholesaler orders. And one of the things we've done, which you know, a lot of breweries have done lately, is we've had to pull out of some territories, unfortunately.
I was going to ask you, how many states are you in? And if you pulled out, how many have you had to pull out of?
I think we were in 28 states 3 years ago, and we're down to 16 states now. And even the remaining 16 states we're in, we had to pull out of very large pieces of three of them. We've gone from 44 wholesalers to 22 wholesalers in about a three-year period.
Rob, we're going to take a break in a minute, but let me ask one question of you before we take a break. And can you stay on for a little while after that,
too? I sure can, right. Yeah.
Okay, this is a question. I'm Rob Todd. What I like about beer is...
That's not fair.
You, yeah, come on.
Uh-huh. Oh, a multi defeat.
One of the things I love about beer, it's one of the things I really love about the beers we're making here, and one of the things that just continues to intrigue me about the white is when a beer is complex and it has mystery, when you're continually tasting new flavors and getting new aromas in a beer. It makes a beer very exciting to drink. It makes it just a great, unique experience every time you try it. And I still get that in our white beer. I'm still getting, you know, picking up subtle flavors or aromas or combination of flavors or trying white with a meal and having it bring out flavors I've never tasted in particular dishes, or vice versa, having a dish bring out a flavor in the beer. So one of the things I just love about beer is just how intriguing it can be, especially when it's complex, with just bringing out these new flavor experiences. I mean, drinking a beer, it really is, it should be an experience. That's just the great thing about the craft beer revolution. 20 years ago, 99% of the beer you could get, it was the same experience all the time. There was nothing new and unique and different. It was commoditized.
Right.
Now, just these great craft beers, I couldn't even begin to name them all. You know, Surly and Stone and Dogfish and Russian River and Avery and Port Abbey. I mean, there's just so many beers everywhere with so many new styles and new experiences.
New breweries all the time, and new beers from the breweries that we love all the time.
Yeah.
I heard a figure that 700 breweries are in planning stages right now across the country.
And yes, it's
crazy.
All those are just going to be new experiences for people, and that's what intrigues me about it. I mean, it's just a great, creative, like, learning, exciting process. It's cool.
Rob, what you say is very true, especially if you look at it internationally. In Germany, which has one of the greatest beer cultures in the world and used to have one of the greatest beer diversities in the world, the breweries are now dying, especially the smaller ones. And it's in large measure because Germany is now becoming more and more a pils monoculture, and beers from north to south all are beginning to taste the same, and they are no longer a diverse experience. And the result is brewery death, whereas in America we have got diversity and breweries are flourishing.
And, you know, what I find interesting about it is that I think a lot of people, a lot of what all of us do is, you know, an act of, you know, of bringing new things to life in a way by remembering our past. And a lot of our food culture and a lot of our beer culture is stuff that we simply forgot. You know, people talk about the trend of vintage beers, but if you go back 100 years ago, people printed on the labels, this beer will be best after 40 years. Everybody who drank beer knew that there were beers that were to be drunk now and ones that were to be drunk later. And running beers were for now, and there were beers that were supposed to be laid down for a long time. And so our cheese culture, our bread culture, our food culture, if you were in a place like New York City 100 years ago, what you would have found was the most interesting beer culture in the world and the most interesting food culture in the world, bar none, no one coming close. You know, because we are an immigrant nation, we brought our beer culture from all over the place. So you had breweries in Brooklyn that made nothing but Weiss beer, breweries that made nothing but porter. And other countries, you know, had their own monocultures, but we had everybody else's culture along with our own. And what we're doing now is waking up. And at one time we had 4,000 breweries, and we're up now to 1,800. So as far as I'm concerned, we're not even half the way back. And so, you know, what the stuff that Rob is doing is not only remembering our culture, but helping other people remember theirs, you know. And I think that, you know, a lot of Belgian brewers never really quite understand what it is that they are still promulgating in the world until they see the fire in the eyes of an American brewer with respect for what they've done and the respect that and love that the American consumer, you know, has for, you know, for the, for these great products. Did I just use the word products? I hate that word.
But every once in a while I slip too.
Every once in a while it pops out. But it just, produce. You know, I'll say produce instead of products. But it is tremendous. And you see that light in their eyes of like, you know, they come here and they're rock stars and they walk down their own streets and they're nobody in a lot of these places. And I think that any culture where you could still be nobody and be a great brewer, well, you know, their beer culture is not going to make it.
Awesome. And we write about it in our book product.
Horace, wait. Okay, Horace, what's the name of your new book again? Tell us. Come on.
The Oxford Companion to Beer Products.
And Christian, what's your book? Christian?
The Great American Ale Trail.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back with more stories and Rob Todd on Beer Sessions Radio. All right, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're sponsored by GreatBrewers.com and supported by TheGoodBrewSeal.com. It's New York City Craft Beer Week in New York. We've had some great events. Last night at Brooklyn Brewery, the launch of Oxford Brewing...
The Oxford Companion to Beer.
The Brewing Companion in the beer, the companion. And it was the best party in New York. And on Thursday night, we have NYC Brewer's Choice at City Winery. We've got over 20 brewers coming, including Rob Todd and Garrett Oliver. And it's going to be an awesome night. Christian DeBenedetti, you've got a great book. Tell us about some of your favorite bars in New York City.
Oh, where to begin? Well, first of all, tomorrow's event is a New York City Craft Beer Week event. For anyone who's listening that's there, we're going to be at the Blind Tiger. And for anyone who knows the old Blind Tiger as well as I did and the new one, it was like a phoenix rising from the ashes, a great beer place reborn as an even better one in different ways. So I'm doing a party tomorrow night for the release of my book, and we'll have some great beers there, including one of Garrett's and a lot of friends and family and just a good night. The Blind Tiger is hard to beat, but there are so many places in New York that run the gamut from high to low, and I wanted to, in my book, be, you know, really almost agnostic towards, you know, there's classic beer bars, but there's also dive bars that have a great vibe or a great beer selection, and there's great restaurants, everything from 11 Madison Park, which, you know, was named the best restaurant in the United States by the James Beard Foundation, has an absolutely incredible beer program. And I was lucky enough to attend a beer pairing dinner that Garrett did with the chefs, with Chef Daniel Hum at 11 Madison Park about 6 weeks ago. And it was an extraordinary night that sort of showed where we can go with food and beer pairing. But, you know, I'm just as happy to hang out in Red Hook, Brooklyn at Sonny's and, you know, and hang out in the cobblestones of Red Hook and do that too. So we have an incredible beer culture in New York. And it wasn't always that way. When I first moved here 2 days before 9/11, it was a different story.
So New York is a cool place. So Horst, last night after your party at Brooklyn Brewery, where did you go?
I forgot.
Good answer.
Now this is the part where you say, apparently I was found.
Yes, apparently I was found.
At Barcade. That's what I'm told.
Were you the one who found me?
I did not find you. I went to a great... A great place nearby called Cariño, which does Distrito Federal style Mexican food, and I had myself a bit of dinner because the as delicious as the slider from the meat hook that I had was, it was not in fact, you know, an entire dinner, so I thought it would be best to lay some food on, you know, at you know, we see a trend right now which is interesting, you know, towards, as much as we all love big beers, you know, towards beers that are not quite so strong, sessionable beers, as we often call them. And all night at the brewery, I was drinking, you know, a beer that we do just at the brewery called Radius, which is 4.8%. And I felt so glad this morning that I was drinking all evening. But I felt
the same way.
I sucked largely
that
stuck beer.
With me that three. One, and it was fantastic.
I walked out there. I'm like, that's right. I am fine.
You must brew some more of that.
We're talking about it. We'll have to commute home.
Yeah. So you only make
Garrett,
that beer.
Is that you, Garrett?
That was me.
Oh, I didn't know. Were you on the first part of the call?
I have been here this entire time, Rob.
I didn't even hear you're on there.
He was uncharacteristically silent. I was getting worried.
Hey, Garrett, could I get a tour of the brewery on Friday? I would love to stop by and check it out. I haven't seen the new system. And
absolutely. I have so many. I have so many things to pour you, including Wild Things. So
I would love to swing by.
Yeah, we will make a plan, my friend.
And the companion.
You don't recognize my dulcet tones?
Oh, I can't believe it took you this long, Rob.
Wait,
come on.
Wait a minute. Now you'll recognize it. You'll never find. Does that ring a bell? No.
I love it.
Another beer like mine.
Well, Rob, you're onto something. I do think that since Brooklyn Brewery expanded, I feel like that Brooklyn Brewery and Garrett in particular, they're the mecca for brewers around the world. I mean, you must be excited to come to New York and check it out, right?
I love coming to New York. Love it. I always have a good time. I got a few trips planned there the next few months. It just so happens. And, yeah, I love coming to New York.
Rob, where are you from?
I grew up outside of Boston. Don't hold it against me, New Yorkers. And I am a Red Sox
fan. We're
a
national show, Rob, so we have listeners
in
Michigan and San
there?
Diego.
Or is your family still there?
Yeah, what
no,
town? What town, Rob?
I don't have family there anymore. But
are they all in Maine
up...
now?
Rob, what town are you from? What town?
I grew up in Carlisle, which is right next to Concord.
And how did you end up as a brewer in Portland, Maine?
It's kind of a long story, but the short version is: went to college in Vermont, 2 years in Colorado, back to Vermont to go to grad school for geology. The day I got back to Vermont, though, and I was getting geared up to apply to grad school, I wanted to teach geology. I called a buddy of mine and just said, hey, I need a job. I just need a job because I need some money, and I'll take anything that you know of in town. And he said, well, do you want to wash kegs at a brewery? That's where I'm working now. And I was thinking to myself, I get to get paid to work, and I get free beer. So I was like, yeah, I'll take that job.
Where was that?
I took the job. That was at Otter Creek, and literally was there for 2 days. And I knew I was going to be in the beer business for the rest of my life.
So did you work for Steve?
It was Lawrence.
It was Lawrence back then. Wow.
Last name Lawrence who?
Lawrence Miller.
Yes, I remember him too.
Before Steve was there, actually. I'm good buddies with Steve now. But
what's Steve's last name?
Parks.
Steve Parks.
Parks. He's
Steve Parks, yeah.
Yeah.
So, Rob, you're a geologist. Will we be seeing a Stein beer, like a Raukenfels Stein beer, where they throw the hot rocks into the wort? That could be fun.
We should do that. I've thought of doing it.
Why not?
There would be some nice, would dovetail nicely with
Bring
my
it full circle, yeah.
Can I get dibs on writing it up for the new brewer?
Yeah. Jason will kill me if I commit to any new beers right now.
So in the Oxford Companion of Beer, do you guys mention particular brewers like Rob or anything else?
We mention a lot of breweries. I mean, one thing I will say is that this is not, you know, a book of breweries. I think breweries that, you know, are... you know, have a particular cultural, you know, significance in some way, shape, or form. And even I think, you know, I would say that, you know, the list is somewhat subjective and arguable. You know, we tried to make it as balanced as possible, but, you know, with everything from 1,800 breweries in the United States to 350 breweries in Italy to many dozens in a place like Brazil, you know, you're not going to manage to cover those. And they'll be covered, I think, well and adequately elsewhere. So we kind of looked to bring something a little different. And hopefully when we do cover breweries, to give people some information about them that they might not otherwise have found.
And Christian, in your book, is anywhere in Portland that you recommend or that you particularly like?
In Portland, Maine?
Yes.
Absolutely. Well, you have Novare Res, which is one of the great, you know, beer bars. And, of course, Allagash is in there and tell the story of the cool ship and the things that are going on in addition to the main line of Allagash beers, the exciting stuff, the experiments. So Maine has a great beer culture, and Portland's a big part of that.
Let's jump over. Peter, we're going to give you a chance.
I actually used to live in Maine. I used to live in Portland. Yeah, and $3 Dewey's was...
cool, but pitch your thing. Stop. Peter, we're running out of time, but Peter Kennedy, simplybeer.com. Tell us why you're on the air tonight in your special program.
Right, so I've been running a website, Simply Beer, mostly focusing on homebrewing now. And I kind of got sick and tired of the way my beers were scored in a lot of competitions. So I started a new homebrewing competition called Iron Brewer. Basically, I dictate to the people three ingredients they have to use in their beer, and then they have full reign and 8 weeks to make a beer and send it to me. So it's a limited number of people in each round, and what makes this very unique is that everybody sends everybody else their beer, and we all judge it together. So homebrewers are judging other homebrewers' beer at the same time.
And Peter, you also are an excellent homebrewer. I've had a lot of your beers, and you rock. Have you won some competitions along the way?
New Jersey State Fair last year. I had my beer brewed at Crow's Brew Pub up there. It was a Patter's beer that I made with Sriracha Ace hops.
So inspired by Garrett.
Actually, it was.
I know that. I mean, everything, Garrett, when you brought in Sriracha Ace, suddenly it's like, wow.
I liked the tequila vanilla bean brown ale.
That was good, too. But you're doing great. You're an up-and-coming home brewer, simplybeer.com. And what's the Iron Brewer? Is there a website for
Ironbrewer.com.
All right, we got that. We got Horst and Garrett. Check out.
You're going to end up selling that name one day for $1 million. I can't even believe you got that. Make sure you keep that registration current, my friend. That is, you know, that's going to pay for your kid's college education. Someone's going to buy that off you.
All right. So this week, Thursday, we're going to wind it up because we got another show coming on. This is the Heritage Radio Network. There's a lot of cool shows, and there's another one coming on at 6. Garrett Oliver, you're going to be at New York City Brewer's Choice Thursday.
I'm gonna be hanging out at Christian's rocking thing tomorrow night. I'm gonna be Thursday at the Brewer's Choice, and it's gonna be a cool NYC Beer Week. You know, I gotta say, love my Philly friends, but it's all about New York.
Christian, anything cool for you, bud?
I'm psyched to do the same thing, Brewer's Choice, Blind Tiger tomorrow, and as many of the other events I can pack in. It's awesome to be back here. I'm a former New Yorker and now I'm back in my hometown of Portland, Oregon, and it's so great to be back in New York.
Right, and Jenna, anything special for craft beer we should know about?
Oh, I'm just looking forward to Brewer's Choice. I mean, I'll be around the Tiger tomorrow, but then I fly out on Friday for Denver because I'm getting excited about the GABF. So I'll talk about that next time I'm on.
All right.
You flying out of LaGuardia?
Actually, I have to fly out of Newark.
I'm going to get a beer in the airport because I head up to Boston.
All right.
Oh, really?
Well, guys, if you want to meet
I'll
Rob Toss, or Garrett.
No, no, this will be my 20th year judging. So, you know, I will see you all out there.
But if you want to meet Rob Todd, you want to meet Garrett Oliver, come to NYC Brewers.
I'm very jealous because you are going to have fun while I'm in my office finishing the 2011 Global Brew Raw Materials Harvest Report for the New Brewer, which will appear November-December issue.
Horst, how can we learn more about you? Because you're the coolest guy that I've met tonight.
Really?
Yes.
I am German and cool. Isn't that a contradiction?
Well, you know, if you like, you know, to not bring bags to the supermarket and things.
Well, you see, sometimes people are not what they appear to be.
So, Horst, do you have a website or a way for us to learn more about you? You got that book, Prost?
I have created, as a service to the community, the GermanBeerInstitute.com, GermanBeerInstitute.com, and you can read a ton of stuff about German beer, almost as much as you will find in the Oxford Companion to Beer.
All right.
And more than most German breweries themselves know.
That is, I hope, correct.
All right. We got Horst, we got Garrett, Peter Kennedy, Christian, De Benedetti.
Bravo.
Hey, Rob Todd, Jen Swartman. So thanks to everybody on Beer Sessions Radio. Nice. Thanks to our sponsors, greatbrewers.com. Learn more about beer, go to greatbrewers.com. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Bree O'Connor and Brett Thompson. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Good night and thank you. Yeah, yeah.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes me feel mellow.
Whiskey's too rough. Champagne costs too much. Vodka puts my mouth in gear. This little refrain should help me explain. As a matter of fact,
thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The following is a message from Heritage Foods USA. 14 family farms and over 50 restaurants have committed to participation in No Goat Left Behind, a new program developed by Heritage Foods USA, a meat distribution company dedicated to preserving endangered breeds. Without an end market, the majority of male dairy goats are sold into the commodity market or killed at birth. Dairy farmers are always struggling with feed prices, milk prices, and weather. Goats usually have twins or triplets, and for every female who will become a milker, there is a male buckling who will become a financial drain. It makes no sense that these males are sold into the commodity market or put to death when the United States imports almost 50% of its annual goat supply. Home consumers interested in participating can order goats through heritagefoodsusa.com. They will receive goats via FedEx, and home delivery is available for New York City customers. In addition to the goat, these packages will also include recipes and a DVD featuring interviews with the farmers, processors, and chefs demonstrating how to break down and cook goat. Again, for more information on No Goat Left Behind, visit www.heritagefoodsusa.com or call Aaron Fairbanks at 718-389-0985. This is a message from Fork and Anger. Aaron Fitzpatrick, the host of our wine program, Unfiltered, is looking for help on Kickstarter to open Fork and Anger, a general store inspired by two food-loving ladies with an equal affection for urban life, the sea, and the agricultural paradise of Long Island's North Fork. The store is situated in a growing community of farmers and winemakers and will become a meeting place offering prepared foods, a variety of sun-dries, and a selection of homespun products, many of which will have their origins in New York State. Your backing will help them fulfill their dream of fostering relationships with the community and making the local food system accessible on a broader scale. Search Kickstarter.com for Fork and Anchor and donate today. The following message is from Bubby's. Bubby's Main Street is thrilled to announce a fall program of special dinners celebrating efforts to renovate American agriculture and the American menu. Each event will feature a conversation with persons who are deeply involved in a significant aspect of this project, followed by a meal that illustrates materially and pleasurably the themes under discussion. From our perspective at Bubby's, we observe and participate in three parallel movements that are gaining momentum in the New York region and around the country. New farmers supplying green markets and alternative food networks with produce and animals raised without relying on an arsenal of chemicals or industrial methods. New artisans reinventing food crafts. And a fresh appreciation of authentic American cooking from all regions and communities. For more information about these events, visit Bubby's.com. That's B-U-B-B-Y-S.com. Or contact Danny Finkel directly at 646-338-0422.